noises from the service entrance.
Bitch, let go!
I ran around the hedge. Two people, one female in a silver matte skirt and burgundy hair, one male in skinny jeans and tight white t-shirt, both involved in an epic battle to the death. The woman, who I realized was a young girl as I ran down the service drive, had the guy's hair in a death grip. She growled as if the only part of her brain that was functioning was way in the back of her head, where the lizards lived. I got between them. She let go, but only after twisting her body around so hard he landed against the wall. He had four long scratches on his cheek.
"She's fucking crazy!" he shouted.
I turned to the girl.
"Willow?"
She was underage. I knew that for a fact. Not to mention out of breath. Red-faced, lipstick smeared.
"Miss Kara? Button your shirt."
I spun on the guy. He pulled a clump of bloody hair out of his scalp.
"There is no way you mistook this person for 18.
"I mistook her for female. Fuck, look what she did."
I took out my phone. "You're right. We'll let the cops sort it out." He ran like his ass was on fire. When I turned back, Willow had buttoned her shirt. I took her chin in my hand.
"Look at me."
She did, and through tears I saw bowling ball pupils.
"What did you take?"
"Just a little X."
"The fact that you think you can tell the difference between a little and a lot speaks volumes."
I let her chin go.
"Don't tell Daddy,"
she sobbed.
"It's 5 o'clock. Who's supposed to be watching you?"
"I'm in middle school. I don't need anyone watching me."
I'd spent most of my career watching much smaller children, but I knew all about teen faux logic.
"I can't even begin to answer that. Come with me."
"I don't have to."
She was making a last-ditch effort to maintain her autonomy and stay out of trouble. Fortunately for her, I wasn't impressed with how she handled either. I picked up the silver clutch that had fallen against the wall, opened it, checked for the phone, and snapped it closed. No self-respecting L.A. teen was going anywhere without their phone.
"Willow," I said, "you're a smart and funny girl with a bright future. That guy needs to be in jail. He was in the wrong. But this is a grown-up party, and you don't belong here."
I walked toward the front, knowing she'd follow. But she didn't. Not right away. She called out from behind me.
"You left us!"
she cried. I didn't turn around, but I stopped.
"One minute you were there, and the next Dad had this old lady cooking, and Kendall's trying to buddy up to me and share fucking makeup tips."
She ran up to me and got in front where I could see the veins of mascara down her cheeks.
"What about our Wednesday lunch? Have you thought about that once? Huh? Because I've thought about it for 3 Wednesdays, and you didn't even call me."
"This is the drugs talking."
"Oh, bullshit. You are such a bullshit liar."
I had to take a deep breath. I was the adult, and I wouldn't be baited. "It would be inappropriate for me to make plans with you. I'm sorry about that. But I miss you too, Willow. Ever since I was fired, I've missed you guys." The muscles in her face went slack, and her jaw dropped enough to leave her lips parted.
"Fired?
You thought I quit?" She looked away, staring into the middle distance, as if watching the movie of the past few weeks on the big screen in her head.
"They said you left."
"It doesn't matter. Come with me." She came, suddenly a kid again, docile, obedient, and overdressed. I found a security guard. He hurried over to me. I plastered a smile on my face and gave him Willow's bag.
"Can you make sure this young lady gets home?"
Willow didn't say a word to me as she was led away. Good chance her driver was waiting at the bottom of the hill. She'd get home fine. I was going to have to call Ray and tell him what happened. I dreaded it. I dreaded talking to him and getting Willow in trouble. But she was still a child. She didn't have any rights yet, and thank God for that. She wasn't ready for them. Now to deal with the other adolescent in my life. This one had his own house and a new daughter. And he was my boss.
Chapter 26, Brad. I don't want anyone in this part of the house, off limits, if I find anyone but my daughter or her nannies back here. Paula and the security guard waited for me to finish. I'd gotten the biggest, scariest-looking one to stand at the hall to Nicole's room. You got it, he said, no problem. People had started arriving, music had started playing, and I had a feeling I was going to regret this. The bombshell and the nannies are on their way back, Paula said when we got to the kitchen. It was bare. One drawing stuck to the fridge, me, Nicole, and Kara. Blakely was a little to the side. Nicole had written all the names on the top. I was so happy she could write them, I nearly had the thing framed. Who's on tonight? I knew Kara was on because I counted the days, but sometimes they switched.
The dark-haired one. It'll be fine, don't you worry your head about it. I have it all under control.
Thank you, Paula. It means a lot to throw this party for Arnie. I couldn't do it without you. She blushed a little. Sometimes I thought she still had it for me, and sometimes I thought I should just up and tell her it wasn't going to happen. But I couldn't afford to lose her. Couldn't risk being right and shaming her into quitting, or being wrong and offending her into walking out.
You just have fun tonight.
She patted my chest. She was from the South. We touched each other. I didn't think anything of it until that night, when her fingers lingered a little too long. I'll try. The script sat on the counter. I'd wanted Bangkok Brotherhood so bad a year ago I'd auditioned for it. I just wanted it. There hadn't been any bad consequences to getting it. Only upside. Now, I had a daughter and a schedule to keep. I had to be in Thailand prepared, or, as Ken liked to remind me, I'd never work again. I put the script in the silverware drawer and slapped it closed. I needed to get back to the script when I was fresh, but in the morning I was going to get sidelined by calls and daily bullshit. Questions, decisions. I'd seen three schools, and in the end, I was going to do exactly what Kara said I should have done in the first place. She was competent. I couldn't say the same for myself. The enormity of my responsibility made me want to give it to someone else. At least when Nicole was out of the room. That was when I decided I wasn't making another decision for or about her ever again. Then she showed up with those dimples and that sense of humor. Or she'd make a bratty demand, and I knew I could handle her because I figured it wasn't so bad. The little crises, like a bathing suit or a pair of shoes, were kind of fun. I kind of wanted to hang out with her more than I wanted to throw a party. A little. Maybe the party could go on and Nicole and I could go get ice cream or something. I'd get back by the time stuff started rolling and...
Mr. Daddy!
Britt Ravenor came in with a bottle in each hand and hugged me, landing big lipstick kisses all over my face. Her girlfriend piled on, and I forgot I wanted to hang out with my daughter.
Chapter 27. Kara. It wasn't uncommon for an A-list actor or studio head to have staff constantly move in, out, and about the house. Housekeepers, assistants, cooks, nannies, and security moved around freely during assigned hours. But the party I walked into was beyond what I'd seen before. Too many people in the house. Too many bikini bottoms. Too many nipples. Too many drinks. What the hell was he thinking? The music was thumping the entire house. Nicole and I hung out for a while building block towers and knocking them down, doing a puzzle, playing pretend princesses. I got her bathed and put to bed. Luckily, the swim had exhausted her. The party had become a low rumble. I didn't realize the power of it until I got to the main part of the house. By then, I was white hot, scanning the laughing, beautiful faces for Brad. Waste of time. The man had his own magnetic field. He was talking to some stunning young girl with his bare foot on the coffee table. All smiles and charm, exposed legs, and tanned hand on a beer. Sunglasses flipped to the top of his head. Sinclair! I couldn't have yelled louder, but he barely acknowledged me until I was 2 feet away. Then he looked over.
Yeah?
What are you doing? The stunning young thing looked me up and down with an unmasked sneer. What a waste of a pretty face.
Throwing a birthday party.
He shrugged. I was dismissed. I had no right to do what I did next. I was an employee. I was not the mother of his child, nor was I the head of the household. I was nobody. Infinitely replaceable. Exactly nothing. Stating my opinion of him, his action, his attitude was so far out of my contractual obligations that I expected to be thrown out as soon as I finished. I pushed him.
literally. You're an asshole. I had a moment where I could have paused, or run away, or calmed myself, but he looked so stricken, I saw an opening, and in my anger, I went right into it.
You should have given her up for adoption if this is what you're going to do, because I've seen this go down before. I've seen how this shakes out. You make this her normal, and she's going to be snorting coke by middle school, in Malibu, with a driver and a Prada bag. Yeah, all that. And she's not going to know where she ends and the paparazzi begin. She's going to be a target for the media unless you protect her. You're the only one between her and...
And what? Getting pawed at by an older guy behind the hedge?
Look at you! Look at you!
I could have said it 10 more times. We'd earned an audience, and though the music hadn't stopped, all conversation had. Paula stepped between us, facing me, and held her arms out.
We're all going to take a deep breath and...
You want to look at me?
Brad shouted past Paula as he slapped his beer on the coffee table.
Look at how you're acting!
I leaned around Paula, even as she shifted to block me.
You have a child in the other room!
He unbuttoned his pants. When everyone gasped, she turned and saw him over her shoulder.
Bradley?
Paula scolded.
Do not...
Get a good look.
He spun around and dropped his drawers, mooning me with his perfect ass. The room went into uproarious laughter, hoots, and shouts. Camera phones were out. Brad shook it for me. I wasn't angry anymore. I was humiliated, cowed completely. Paula made a show of covering her eyes.
Oh my good Lord Jesus, what are you...
For the third time, she wasn't allowed to complete a sentence.
Daddy! Your butt is out!
Nicole cried in her pajamas. She obviously hadn't been as exhausted as I thought. Maybe I would have gotten angry again. Maybe I would have found a way to stay and protect her. Maybe my heart would have softened another 10 degrees if one of the caterers hadn't been holding up a tray of glasses. She didn't expect a 5-year-old still in her pajamas and bare feet. She only tried to dodge a chair and tripped on Nicole. For a second, time stopped. The server kept the tray aloft while keeping her feet under her, but weight plus momentum plus the slippery wet platter resulted in a show-stopping crash. Nicole stood in the center of a minefield of melting ice and broken glass.
Don't move, Brad shouted.
Get her out of here!
Paula pointed at me with one hand and Nicole with the other. Before I could tell Paula that nothing would make me happier, Nicole melted into loud, blubbery sobs. Brad tiptoed through the glass and lifted her to safety. The staff descended on the mess with towels. When he turned, he and I were face to face, Nicole crying on his shoulder. The music rose, the chatter came back, and he and I were still locked, not speaking. Not with words, at least. His anger was still all over his face, but it veiled something else, something deeper. Regret? Understanding? He just mooned you to make a point. I'll pack my things, I said. He didn't answer, and though I should have just walked off and done what I said I was going to do, he held me fast with his stare.
Your resume said you have a first aid certificate.
So? He looked down. I looked down. A pool of blood spread beneath his foot.
You're a mess, I said.
Can you fix it, Doc?
Only if you promise to never show me your butt again.
Can't promise that, sorry. I'm just going to have to rely on the kindness in your heart.
I should have politely refused, because I couldn't be in that house another minute. But what was it about mistakes? Why were they so sticky? They rolled along, picking up other mistakes, growing into a ball of unstoppable bad habits on an ever steeper incline. A dozen people could have looked at his foot. But I had to do it, because he challenged my kind-heartedness. Lean on me, I said, about to enter into my 11 millionth mistake. I put the kit in Nicole's bathroom. He put his arm around my shoulder, while his other arm held his daughter. He smelled of pool chlorine and alcohol, leaning on me to hop to the bathroom as he fist-bumped his buddies, promising to return to the good times.
When we got to the private part of the house, his hand cupped my shoulder instead of hanging off it. Like the waterline creeping forward on the beach, the dreams seeped into my mind. The pool table, his hands on me, the way I came when he entered me. Remember the part where he pulled his pants down like a child? I did. And this was a symptom of being a heterosexual woman of childbearing age who hadn't had sex or male attention in too long. But his hand felt good on my shoulder, and after yelling at him in front of a room full of people, I needed to feel good.
Chapter 28, Brad. Nicole's bathroom looked like a bloody crime scene, and Kara was a sadistic fucking criminal. I sat on the purple kid-sized chair. Kara sat on the pink and green plastic stool we kept by the sink so my daughter could reach the faucet. My foot rested in her lap as she dug tweezers into my skin. She'd put Nicole in bed and closed the door behind us. "Big one coming," she said. If it was so big, why did she need the goggles? Was she trying to look like a fierce fucking human torturing alien from Venus? "Ow, Jesus!" She held up a bloody shard, smiling.
"Are you all right, Daddy?"
Nicole asked from the other side of the door. "I'm fine, Pumpkin." Clink. The shard went into a tray. Sadist.
"You have nice feet,"
she said, angling the tweezers to grab another piece of glass. "Thank you.
Can't say the same for your ass."
"My ass isn't nice?" I was actually offended. Deeply hurt. I had been called worse, but coming from her, it cut deep.
"Nope."
She pulled at the skin on the bottom of my foot to expose the glass, or to turn me on a little. Just a little. Between her hands on me and the way she stuck my heel between her legs, I was turned on just a little. A lot. If I had to split hairs, she was turning me on a lot, and I had no idea if she intended it, or if this was just Kara being Kara. I get paid good money for that ass.
"Well, it's not nice."
"You're making some comment about the circumstances." She pulled the goggles to the top of her head. Her eyes were ringed red from the edge of the eye gear, and her hair made crazy spikes around the strap.
"The circumstances?"
"You came at me like a wild banshee."
"And so you mooned me?"
"You treated me like a child in front of people I work with."
"Then you acted like one?"
"It's my job to make this story fun. That's what I did." She slid her goggles back down and inspected my foot, wielding the tweezers with her mouth pressed tight. She must be stung from losing the argument. I wouldn't rub it in. I liked having her attention on me. Liked her hands. I leaned back on the plastic chair, soaking in my victory. I was going to take it easy on her. I was drunk on pain and forgiveness. Her thumb along my skin. Yeah, gentle and confident. My dick woke up a little, and I was just relaxed enough to not give a goddamn that she was off limits. The music still came in loud and clear from downstairs. I was torn between missing my own party and settling into the way she touched me.
"I have a comeback for that, you know,"
she said. With her eyes not grabbing all the attention, I got a chance to really look at those lips. The top one was slightly bee-stung, and the bottom one was trapped under her teeth as she bit it in concentration. "Oh yeah?" I linked my fingers together over my stomach. "Tell me your comeback. And if it involves those lips around my dick." She pulled a piece of glass out of my foot. "No pain."
"That it's my job to protect Nicole, and by yelling at you, I was protecting her. It's a pretty good comeback, as they go. But then you'd come back with, 'No, it's her father's job to protect her,' and I'd say, 'Nice job, Daddy,' and I'd win the battle but lose the war."
Too fucking shay. "No one told me there was a war," I said.
"There is."
She dropped the tweezers in the sink and took off the goggles, plucking a little spray bottle out of the kit.
"There's a war for Nicole, and you win, no matter what. You can and should do whatever you need to. It's my job to make sure she doesn't die on my shift."
She sprayed my foot and I jumped. She held the ankle steady while she burned the fucking skin off.
All I could say was, "Ha, ha, ha. But I'm sorry I came at you like that. You could fire me, for much less. Probably should."
"I guess we're even then, from the shower." She stared at my foot, but not really at it, more through it.
"That night, you came home from the SAG event late."
"Yeah?"
"Do you remember anything? How you got in the bed?"
Oh, shit. My mouth, my throat, my guts went dry. My pants were on. My only defense.
"You're welcome."
What happened? Her eyes darkened, and I panicked. I'd wanted her, but had I taken something I shouldn't have?
Nothing. You talked a lot of nonsense. I got your shoes and shirt off and put you to bed.
Thank you. She squirted the open wounds again, and I shouted.
Daddy?
Nicole's voice came from the other side of the door. Are you okay? Really? He's fine. She's killing me. Kara cracked a smile. It was a gorgeous sight.
Hey, don't kill Daddy.
Nicole wasn't kidding. Her voice was soaked in terror. We looked at each other. Right. Death should be off the table. I leaned for the door and swung it open. Nicole trotted in with a little drawing pad in one hand and a pencil in the other. She nearly impaled me with it as she hopped onto my lap and turned to face Kara. From my vantage point, I could see her point the pencil at her nanny. I had to imagine her tough little face.
Don't kill Daddy.
I won't.
She split the paper off the back of a Band-Aid and stuck it on me.
But if he keeps it up, I might have to hurt him just a little.
Okay,
Nicole agreed. Okay, I objected. My dad had always complained there was a female conspiracy in the house, and I started to think he might be right. As if she wanted to confirm the conspiracy, Nicole turned to face me, practically kneeing me in the groin. Even though she was on my lap, she waved her fingers at me to get closer. She whispered in my ear,
I like Miss Kara.
Okay. She put her finger to her lips.
Shush.
She ran her fingers over my lips.
Zip it. Lock it.
She opened my chest pocket and dropped the little pad into it.
Put it in your pocket.
I'm zipped. I looked past her and saw Kara smiling. Nicole fished her little pad back out and sat frontward. I took her hair in my hands, separating strands. You always make these pretty braids, I said, crossing one strand over the other, then another. I made a mess. You need to teach me.
It's easy,
Nicole said, as if she'd ever done it.
What are you working on?
Kara pointed to the little pad before she got another Band-Aid from the box. I settled into the painless part of the process. Nicole flipped through the little spiral notebook until she found her page.
It's a unicorn,
she showed me with her pencil as a pointer.
And that's her brother. He's a Pegasus.
Wow, I said. It's kind of really good. I held it up for Kara.
Is this normal?
She's ahead in fine motor and verbal skills, if that's what you mean.
And she can read. I kissed her nose. You're amazing. She waved her hand in front of her nose.
Daddy, you smell bad.
My phone beeped and buzzed. I got it out. Arnie. Dude. Right. I had a life I was living.
The music seemed louder once the spell of these two was broken. I had friends downstairs and things I was doing. I had a movie to make and a staycation to take. I'd gotten distracted from my distractions by my favorite distraction. He sent me another text right after.
Are you fucking the nanny? Fuck, what a douchebag.
No!
I put the phone away and slid Nicole off my lap.
I have to go.
I had to prove immediately that I wasn't fucking the nanny. And not because I cared what anyone thought about me. Shit, I just pulled my ass out in front of 20 people with camera phones and DMZ's email. But because it wasn't good for anyone to think Kara was doing the daddy. Nicole flipped a page and held it up.
This is my pony.
Nice, I looked at Kara. You're on tonight?
Yes,
she said with a hint of suspicion.
You need to buy me this pony,
Nicole said with flat seriousness. Okay, I patted her head. Literally, I patted her head and promised her a pony. That was how much I wanted to get downstairs in less time than it would take me to hop out of the nanny's bed and get dressed. It might get loud tonight, so bring her to the pool house if you need to. Her reaction was swift and angry, and she held it back. I saw it. One nanosecond she gritted her teeth, and the next she smiled like a game show host.
Sure.
I left, gimping on the sliced foot, smoothing my hair down so it didn't suggest a just-fucked-her look. I was halfway down the stairs before I thought about that.
Why did it matter what people thought?
Why was I protecting her? She was a big girl, she was doing her job, and I was keeping my hands off her. Done and done.
Chapter 29. Kara. Kara, it's Ray. As if Ray Haywood wasn't in my contacts. As if I wouldn't know his number straight off or I'd wiped him from my phone. Nicole's room was getting dark, and the freshly bathed little girl had gotten to sleep while I reclined next to her.
Willow says she saw you,
Can you call me?
If I called him, he'd hear the music and the party downstairs. I didn't want him to. And I didn't want to wake up Nicole, who was sleeping on my shoulder. And I didn't want to navigate the minefield of Willow's word against mine in real time. I had no doubt she lied. She was a good girl, but there wasn't a sane eighth grader in Hollywood. Puberty was a gateway drug to adolescence, and everyone overdosed.
Can't talk now, sorry.
She's still pretty shaken up.
I had no idea what she'd told her father. I was sure it was all my fault. Maybe it was. Maybe I'd been too much of an employee and not enough of a leader.
I looped one arm over Nicole, and I held up the phone with the other hand so I could type.
I don't work for you anymore, so I'm just going to come out and say what I think.
Was I going to do this? I hit send, but still, I could backtrack, soften it, right?
As if in direct answer, a bottle fell downstairs. Nicole's room looked onto the pool, and as the party had continued into the night, my disappointment in humanity had grown deeper. She was at Brad Sinclair's party this afternoon. No friends, just her. Not appropriate. Total cry for help. You're lucky. It could have been real bad.
More? Was I going to go for it? You bet I was.
You and Kendall aren't her buddies. She's a good kid, but she needs supervision and guidance. Parents.
I waited for the long-winded reply defending his parenting and his daughter. Instead, I got something much shorter.
Call me when you can. I want to talk.
My job with Ray Haywood hadn't been terrible. Actually, it had been great. Maybe that's why it hurt to lose it. Ray Haywood was a single dad living and working in Los Angeles. He never looked at me as an available bed buddy or gave me a hard time about how I managed the house. He was just completely disengaged, and as Hollywood parents went, that was as good as it got. My last day on the job started like every other day. The kids were at school. I'd made them their breakfasts, packed their lunches, made sure Willow had her homework, confirmed the robotics tournament for Saturday, and piled them into my car. I'd dropped them at two separate private schools across Los Angeles, promised to come back at 2:30 and 4:30 for pickup, and driven back to the house where I'd intended to pick up Jedi's toys, then make annual doctor's appointments. When I'd gotten back, Raymond was on the couch in his linen suit, looking as if his dog just died. But he hadn't. Frisky was at his feet, slapping his tail against the Movondo rug, waiting for me to get back so I could feed him.
Hi, I said, glancing at the clock. Ray was never home at 9 a.m., not unless there was a parent-teacher conference, and sometimes not even then. He was rarely home for dinner or bedtime either. He was a quality-time parent. A week in Disney with all the trappings, summer in Aruba, skiing at the Aspen Resort, parenting as if cramming for a test. I couldn't complain. I liked Aruba, and I liked his kids.
You all right? I'd asked, hanging my coat. I lined Jedi's shoes up with Willow's. Jedi's special talent was laughter. He wasn't detail-oriented, and I chased him around all day, picking up, straightening, putting away as he laughed his way through life.
I'm fine. Just wanted to chat.
He'd indicated I sit across from him, which was awkward. I'd sat in any chair I wanted for the past 2 years. I'd sat with him and worked on middle school applications for Willow. I'd briefed him for the interviews and done research on which schools she'd like. She'd get into all of them, of course. Not only could she go wherever she wanted on her own steam, but her father was a household name that was feared and respected. I'd been immune to his white teeth and swoopy little coif. He wore a big silver ring on his middle finger and a leather strap thing on his wrist.
Okay, I sat across from him. Teacher recs go in this week. I think the administration's going to call Jeannie at Harvard Westlake for her, but she really likes Marlboro. They won't push her for both, so...
This isn't about Willow.
Oh, okay.
That was all we'd talked about in the past month as he got in late from his girlfriend's place and left early for morning call, so it could be anything.
I think you're probably the best nanny I've ever seen. All my friends are jealous.
He'd smiled with his big white chiclets as if he got personal pleasure from the envy of others. Thank you.
The kids, they love you. I think,
he tapped his thumbs together,
I think they think of you as more mother than their mother.
Their mother lived in Humboldt County. When her acting jobs dried up and the divorce went through, she'd moved there with a boyfriend and grew weed full-time. Raymond had done the impossible in the state of California and gotten primary custody. The kids Skyped with their mother once a week. It was uncomfortable, and Willow got sullen whenever the call came through. I'm not a replacement, I said, citing the nanny mantra. Just a supplement.
Right, well, that makes this really hard, is what I'm trying to say.
Ah, crap. The surface of my skin had gone cold. There was only one conversation an employer started that way. This is hard? I asked. He was going to say it. I wasn't saving him the trouble because I still didn't believe it.
I have to let you go.
There it was.
Why? I'll give you references anywhere you want to go.
Why?
I'll say the kids got older and do not make me ask you again.
I used my bossy voice, the voice that dropped an octave, the voice that meant business. Jedi picked his shit up and Willow did her homework when I used that voice. Raymond's tan went gray and his jaw slacked a little. God, I didn't know whether to slap him for being a wuss or crawl under a rock for pole-vaulting my boundaries. I held my breath and my tongue. Those references were important.
It's Kendall, he'd said,
opening his hands as if he were presenting a gold box full of high-quality motives instead of yet another relationship with yet another actress.
She's a Hollywood girl. She sees someone...
He made an open-handed vertical hand motion toward me.
A woman living with me.
It's not like that. Did you explain that it's not like that?
I did. But you have to admit, Kara, there's no hiding.
He made that motion again, up and down my body.
I dress modestly.
I know. You're a professional. But look, he shrugged. She's worried. And if she's going to marry me, she wants to know there isn't a second beautiful woman down the hall.
Oh, they were getting married. At least he was buying the cow that was dropping shit all over the house. His house. Now Kendall's house. Not my house.
I debated whether I should tell you the truth, but I think I owed you that much.
Again, he wasn't being an asshole. God, I wanted to be so mad, and I couldn't be.
Thank you for the references.
I'll cut you a check for 6 months' severance.
Thank you. I'll pack. I shot up and walked to the stairs.
Do you want to wait for the check?
He called from behind me. Did I want to wait for money? Yeah, I did. I also wanted to call Kendall and explain to her that her future husband was not attractive to me at all. I'd heard him fight with his ex-wife. I'd seen him ditch his kids for a screw. I'd never seen him hand either of his children a morsel of food when they were hungry. He doled out compliments like potato chips, but they were brittle and slippery and nutrient-free. He was a grotesquerie of trending fashion statements, and in his eyes I could see the bitter, entitled old man he was going to become. I wanted to tell her I wasn't a threat to her, but she wouldn't believe it. I dug my suitcase from the back of my closet. I'd been with the Haywoods since I was 22. 2 years. I'd gotten a master's in child development in that time. It had been worth it, but I wasn't ready to leave.
You don't have to pack so fast.
Raymond stood in the door, his face and body stiff with concern. I don't want Kendall to think I'm going to try and get you in bed before I go. What your fiancé thinks is important. Seriously. You need to show her you care about her feelings and you'll do what she wants. I don't want to mess with what you have with her. I was being disingenuous. I believed what I said, but I didn't think giving Kendall what she wanted would ever satisfy her. I plopped a pile of clothes from my drawer into the suitcase. I can come by a few times to help with the transition.
I don't have anyone to pick up Jedi today, he said. The new lady isn't coming until late this afternoon, and I have to get to work.
The pile of jeans hovered over the suitcase. I'd stopped thinking about packing when my brain overloaded. He'd already hired someone. And he was asking me to pick up Jedi, who got out of kindergarten at 2:30, and not Willow, who got out of robotics class at 4:30, because he already had someone for later in the afternoon. "Did the kids know?" I asked.
"No, I'll tell them later. You should just drop him off."
He hooked his thumbs in his front pockets and tapped his fingers on his thighs. "Let me pick up both kids. Let me talk to them. Let me cook for them one more time and eat with them so I can answer their questions. Have whomever it is start after dinner."
"No, we're doing it this way."
This is why you don't get attached to the kids. This is why you do your job and think about something else and try to have your own relationships. You protect your heart as if your life depended on it. And you fail, but you try. I snapped the suitcase shut. "I'll take that check now." Nicole wasn't generally a deep sleeper, but I had to get out from under her. It had gotten dark an hour ago, and I had to use the bathroom. Carefully, inch by inch, I slid out, tucked her in, and did my business. When I got back to the bedside, I looked out the window. I could see the pool house, where my own bed was, the pool itself, the people surrounding it, mellowed by the night. The music had slowed, too. It would be harder to slip back to my room without being noticed. I wasn't cut out for this. What did Ray want? What was happening with Willow? What would happen to Nicole if I left? She'd be fine. They'll all be fine. I had no power, no control, no say in any of it. And I could be wrong about anything because they weren't my kids, and I'd never have my own. Let it go. On the patio, Brad bro-hugged some guy. On ground level, in the daylight, I could probably identify him, but from Nicole's room he was just a guy talking to my boss, a loyal man with huge talent, a relaxed demeanor, and an earnest sense of humor. He was just another thing I wanted, but wasn't allowed to think about wanting. Self-pity tasted worse than a hangover. I hated it. I left, walked down the hall, the steps, through the living area, the floor wiped to a sterile shine. The screen door was open. I closed it behind me and skirted the outer edge of the pool area, taking my powerlessness with me.
Chapter 30. Brad. I was at the mellow stage of the evening, but the evening hadn't caught up. I sidelined at the pool watching everyone dance and swim. The bartender flirted. The security guys made themselves scarce. The DJ I hired at the last minute was famous in his own right, and shit was going nuts. And I was Mr. Pensive, holding the same warm beer for 20 minutes. I didn't fight it. Mellow was all right. I saw Kara slip out the back door and make her way around the pool fence. Walking quickly, her hair bobbed in the rhythm of her steps. Sensible flats for chasing a kid around. Jeans and blouse that would have looked dumpy on any other woman looked sexy as hell on her. If I was thinking about settling down, which I wasn't, but if I was thinking about it, she was exactly the kind of woman I'd look for. Even without Nicole, it wasn't about that. She wasn't afraid to speak her mind, and her mind was really on point. She could shoot a mean game of 9-ball. None of that was even on my radar, if I was being honest with myself. That was after the fact shit. And the fact was, she turned me on. She wasn't supposed to, but man, oh man. Something about the canned peaches scent and the body she tried to hide. I knew what she had, and it was perfect. Even through the steam on the shower doors. I didn't realize I was deep down the rabbit hole until Arnie crossed paths with her. Said a few words with a laugh. Shit. Nothing that came out of that guy's mouth was anything I wanted Kara to hear. She said something back, and as she walked away, he slapped her ass. I was halfway across the yard before I consciously decided to move. Arnie, you stupid fuck! He had his hands out as if to say, what did I do? Fuck him. I could deal with him later. I chased her. Kara, I called. She turned. I'm sorry for him, about him, whatever. Not whatever. Fuck! I hadn't felt inadequate since I moved to Los Angeles. I got breaks few of my friends got. Girls worshipped me. Look, that's the fact. I could sugarcoat it in humility, but you wouldn't believe it. I was a king and a hero as far as I could see. Well, right then, I felt $2 short for the 99-cent lunch. It's fine,
No, it's not. She leaned on one foot and looked up.
Okay, it's not fine. Just keep him away from me, okay?
I will.
I have the monitor.
She indicated the pool house, but didn't look at me. Like she couldn't. Sure, sure.
Dude, she wants you. Do you see how she can't look at you?
I was making stuff up in my head, and it didn't matter. She was an employee. The most beautiful employee I had. The most essential, the warmest, biggest pain in my fucking ass. She went through the obstacle course of people and furniture, taking the most direct route to the back. I followed her, as if she had me on a string. I couldn't let her go. She drew a circle of sanity and caught me in it. I needed 5 minutes of her time. She relaxed me, made my life seem just a little less crazy. I didn't know what I wanted out of her, but I couldn't get that mellow back while I wanted her against reason. I got to her at the gate to the pool house.
Have you ever been to Thailand?
Yes, she said, still walking fast. Why?
I have this movie, Bangkok Brotherhood.
She put her hand on the gate as if she was about to push it open. Behind me, someone dove into the pool.
How did you know? It's my job to know.
The music was lower, past the pool. I wouldn't have heard her otherwise. She still hadn't looked at me. Fast, fleeting impressions. Her black lashes as she looked down. The rippling turquoise light from the pool on one side of her face, and darkness on the other. A woman laughing in the house. The crickets on the pool house side of the gate. The creak of the earth grinding up against my life. I don't know what to do, I said. I'm confused every day, but I can't go without her. And I can't go without you.
My 30 days is over during that shoot.
Was she being hostile? What was with the pointed look, or the way her head tilted so her hair fell along her cheek?
I needed her. Her presence made Nicole's life easy and my responsibilities bearable. But there was nothing more to it. She drew me in. Her competence wasn't comforting. It fueled a desire that all the wild girls in the world hadn't.
I'll double your rate, I said.
You don't think you're bringing her, do you?
Pardon me? I said, reacting before thinking. I was trying to be polite, but she countered by holding her hands up as if fending me off.
Never mind, sorry. You're fine. Your call, totally.
She stepped back, spun, opened the gate to the pool house. She was going to go to bed. I didn't want to be alone in my overcrowded house. Didn't want to end the night on that note.
Wait!
I leapt to her side, closing the gate behind me. She erupted in light. Motion sensors. I'd had them installed all along the path to the house. She spun on me.
Mr. Sinclair, I have no say in where you take her or what you do.
Let me hear your say anyway. She crossed her arms, paused, thinking before she spoke. I like that. A woman who engaged the engine before putting the car in drive was a rare thing in my world. Or maybe not. Maybe I just enjoyed her engine a little more.
You sure?
She looked up at me suspiciously. Her eyes changed color, constantly, and at the back door they were navy blue with brown flecks. I had a strange and inappropriate thought about what beautiful children she'd make.
I'm sure. Spit it out.
She didn't. She took another second to look toward the pool, where the party was in full swing, then back at me.
Anything I say is said because I care.
Got it. Moving on.
And because I want you to succeed.
Train's pulling out of the station, miss. Better get on it.
Okay, first off, you really haven't dealt with this at all. Not that I blame you. Having a child dropped in your lap out of nowhere is an adjustment even for people who are prepared. But you haven't stopped the partying or the working one iota since she arrived.
I bristled, but acted like I didn't. Good thing I was an actor. I've cut the partying by a lot, I'll have you know.
Well, I'll trust you on that, but all these people make it hard for you to get to know each other. And the work? Whenever Paula's over, you chase Nicole out, and Paula's over 10 hours a day.
I have to work. I'm not the only one in town working.
You're the only one in town with a kid you never met.
Man, she was so close to the line where I'd tell her to pack up. But she was right on the fucking thing. But the other side of that line was a cliff.
She had no idea what was at stake. Everything I worked for and wanted, because Nicole had shown up. Your parents did a great job while they were here, but they're from a different world, and all their kids are adults. They didn't set you up with routines, habits, events she can count on. And now you're going to take her to Thailand with you?
What am I supposed to do, leave her here?
Stay home.
Stay home. Sure. And let a $120 million movie fall through.
tell them to just cast another bankable guy who happened to be available right now. Because anyone who's bankable isn't scheduled a year in advance. Yeah, that was going to work out great when I couldn't get another picture because I was a flight risk. I think I laughed, or some snide version of it. Her face went soft, dropping from hard truth to a malleable reality I didn't understand. I can't watch this. It's too much. She paced across the dark path, tripping the lights as she walked. Jesus, she kept moving that goddamned line. You're not supposed to get emotionally involved, you know, I called out. She stopped and stayed still long enough for the lights to flick out. I held my breath. The moonlight fell blue on her hair, and she looked like she could just fold into the darkness. I kept my breath. Didn't need air. Wouldn't know what to do with it. She turned so slowly. The lights didn't register it. You're right, she said. That's why this is temporary. That's why I didn't want to work for a celebrity household, because I can't stand seeing kids getting dragged all over the world or orphaned by their parents' jobs. I've seen it done well, and I've seen it done right, but it's not often. She walked down the path, and the lights followed. This was bullshit. I ran out and got in front of her. Lady, you have no idea what you're talking about. I've done the best I can. I was going along pretty as you please before this bombshell dropped. She's not a bombshell. She's not a problem to solve. She's a human being you made. You don't see her. You don't see how hard she's working to deal with what happened. What about you?
What?
What are you dealing with?
As your consultant, I advise...
She stopped talking, letting her advice hang midair. I wanted it. I wanted to pluck it out of dead space and take it, whatever it was.
What?
I advise... She took a deep breath.
You seem all right.
What kind of advice is that?
What do you want for her, for you? What were you hoping for?
The idea that I was hoping for anything was ridiculous. I laughed. It had a sardonic edge, what my grandmother would have called laughing out of two sides of your face. I ain't had a chance to hope for much, ma'am. I was just going about my business. I was a happy guy, you know? All I had to do was work and be nice to people, so you'll excuse me if I have to adjust.
You never thought about it? When you saw your friend Michael Graydon adopt 6 kids, what did you think? Anything?
I didn't know if she was implying I was deficient. Would she? And what did I think of my buddy marrying a lady pap and adopting 6 kids? Figured it would happen at some point, the normal way, girl, then wife, then baby. And I think he's crazy, fucking nuts. He can't go out without asking his wife. Can't take a dump without having a kid banging on the door. He had a career. A real career. Now he's doing one movie a year and spending the rest of the time in legit theater so he can be home. What the hell is that? Is that me? Is that Brad Sinclair? Mike didn't work his way out of a lumberyard in Arkansas, all right? He was born royalty. That's not even an option for me, so this little girl, she's gonna have to roll with it. Kara tapped her finger against her bicep and watched me as I had a mini meltdown. Didn't move. Jesus Christ, she was so in control. How did she do that? I should have been ashamed of having a tirade. Mom had a way of making me so embarrassed of my tantrums that I stopped.
How do you like that now? Everyone seeing your insides? Pretty as a wild boar, I'd say.
Somehow, Kara didn't make me feel like that. I felt safe. Weirdly safe. Uncomfortably safe.
What?
I asked.
I was an afterthought. My parents loved me, but they didn't know what to do with us. We were an inconvenience. That was how I felt. And when I see other kids having to bend their lives around their parents' careers, it makes me sad. And I want to solve it for them. But there's no solving it. And here I am again.
Wow. That was more information than I ever thought she'd give about herself. And I wanted to answer every word. I wanted to tell her that she wasn't anyone's inconvenience. Her parents loved her. They had to. Who wouldn't? Do all the nannies talk like that?
Only the ones with 30-day contracts.
She was leaving. I kept forgetting that. Figured it would work itself out, so she'd stay. Obviously, that hope was one-sided. I wasn't used to chasing women. They chased me, or appeared right and ready where I needed them. This one was different in every way. One, not a woman in the strict sense, because she was staff. I was paying her to do a job. She wasn't a hanger-on or a co-star. She wasn't available,
I wasn't supposed to go near her, not in that way. But man, shoot me in the face. The way she ran her fingers through her hair to get it out of her face and the way it just flopped over it again. And the crickets, the smell of bluegrass like home. It just looked right. For the first time, it made sense. And fuck sense. You're a time bomb, I said, filter-free Brad in full effect. Her jaw set, and for the second time we stood still long enough for the path to flick into darkness. Her lips parted, and before another word left her mouth, I was in motion. I kissed her. I didn't know why. To smash the barrier of her hardened jaw. To sweep away the bullshit talk of consulting, whatever. It was wrong. But at the time, it seemed like the only thing to do. She pushed me so hard I fell back a step. Disappointing, but not unprecedented. She stood back, panting, took a gulp. I had to work hard not to smile. I still had it.
Chapter 31. Kara. His lips were heaven. His hands on my face were planet dream and planet real, crashing, fusing, pulling both out of orbit. I couldn't breathe, couldn't think, couldn't even groan how good he felt touching me. Better than the dreams, better than the morning orgasms he inspired. Oh God, I was falling for this. In half a hot second, my defenses dropped with a clang, and I let myself get hurled into deep space by that kiss. Spinning and twisting, reality and fantasy joined into a single burning body. Kara, you're not supposed to do this. A single small voice threaded through my consciousness. Then regret. Then anger. At him, at myself, at my body. I had to push him away violently, or the push was going to turn into a caress. He took a step back, and I caught my breath. Jesus Christ, Sinclair, what do you think you're doing? I didn't feel bad about pushing him, because the anger was still in my veins. I had to stop myself from pushing him again. I didn't think I'd be able to walk away. Do you think I want to end up on the cover of some magazine? You think I want to get dirty looks up and down Sunset? This guy could ruin me. He had all the tools to do it. He was gorgeous and laid back. He listened when I spoke and had a daughter who was just about perfect. But I'd be on the cover of tabloids. I'd become an ugly stereotype. I'd get ditched with nothing but a bad reputation to show for it. I'd cry. I hated crying. Children cried, and I soothed them by not getting all weepy myself. There he stood, with the pool party behind him, a movie star. The most eligible bachelor in Hollywood, and to me, he was an overwhelmed father with no clue how to manage his daily tasks, but formidably lit by stars. An awe-inspiring display of power and presence with a magnetism that led right to him. Hollywood stars weren't stars just because of their light. They had a gravity-generating mass and unbearable heat. Something coded in their genes, like hair color or height. I'd seen it before from the diplomats I met when I was a kid to the moms and dads I worked for in Los Angeles, and having identified it, I resisted it. Easy. He was different. His heat seemed made for me. It wasn't. It was a trick. That kiss, as short and inappropriate as it was, had vibrated every cell. His taste, his scent, the feel of his lips. I had to pack. Just pack and go. This job was tainted. Everything was tainted now. Head down, I walked to the pool house, my sexless shoes pumping in and out of my vision. I had to go. Never see him again. Maybe once. Stopping dead in my tracks with my hand on the doorknob, I laughed. What's so funny? Brad asked from 10 feet behind me. He had his shirt tail to his lip, exposing a flat, tight washboard stomach and that goddamn muscled V thing at the waist of his low-hanging shorts. I've lost my mind, that's all. We have something in common. No, let's not do this. Look, I... He stopped himself when we said the same thing at the same time. I'm sorry. What was I apologizing for? Being kissed? Being watched in the shower? What the hell was wrong with me?
You keep having to apologize for inappropriate behavior, I said. Then I opened the door and walked in. He stood just outside, backlit by the front light. It came to me that we were alone. It was dark. He'd just kissed me in a moment of weakness. I could claim weakness, too, because I was weak. My knees barely held me, and my body gushed with desire.
Don't be done, he said,
his voice stroking under my clothes, which was all in my mind, the result of a year without a date. But I couldn't breathe right, and my nipples got hard under my cotton bra. My feelings were as inappropriate as his actions, and I had no control over either. I don't know what to do, I said. I was being too honest. I was about to cross into unprofessional.
Tell me what to do then.
I don't know where I got so bold. Something in me was pushing him away because he scared the hell out of me, or I scared the hell out of me. When he raised his eyebrow as if I'd crossed a line, something in my chest shrunk. I didn't want him to be displeased, even though I wanted him to make it easy for me and throw me out right there and then. Kick everyone out, I said. He didn't hesitate to take his phone out, which was unexpected. The light shined in his face as he tapped and swiped the glass, the light casting shadows from below and lighting his blue eyes to light gray. He put the phone in his pocket, and the light under him snuffed.
5 seconds.
He didn't explain further. If he'd been unsure of himself, he wasn't now. His feet spread apart, arms crossed, chin high, music thumping behind him. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Nothing changed.
10, then.
5 seconds later, give or take, the music abruptly stopped. A chorus of aws went up, but still, we didn't move. The pathway lights flicked out. Then the voices and splashing were over. Then the undulations of the turquoise light slowed. Still, we said nothing, just regarded each other. I didn't know what he felt. Couldn't have guessed at it. He could have any woman he wanted, any time he wanted. The most glamorous, sophisticated women in the world were at his beck and call. But maybe the things he didn't remember saying were true. Maybe he did want me. I took care of children for a living. In order to do my job, I had to wear sensible clothes and speak in a lilting, sing-song voice. Nothing about me could have been desirable to a man like him. Yet, in those seconds, with his eyes on me in the darkness, I tingled everywhere my skin was covered, as if his vision burned through my clothes.
You have the monitor, he said, fully stepping into the house.
In the new silence, his voice resonated against the sound of the crickets and the pool filter. He stood still, bare feet spread, arms crossed.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm not making this easy for you.
It's not your job to make it easy for me. I shifted the little speaker from one hand to the other nervously. It hissed and crackled when it moved. You need to start looking for new staff. I held the monitor out. He put his hand over it, but didn't take it.
Stay. You should really stay.
I can't. I was interrupted by an ear-splitting scream from the monitor. Nicole. Brad spun around and bolted. I was right behind him. Out the door, running faster than the motion sensors could react, he took 2 long steps and vaulted over the fence. I went through the gate and skidded on the wet tiles around the pool, while Brad kept his bare feet on the grass, running across the patio, through the kitchen, past tipped bottles and a bra and a sock from somewhere. He and I ran up the stairs, down the hall, and through the white door where... Nicole. Tears streaming, curled in a ball of pink ponies and white ruffles. Brad scooped her up, and she screamed.
Kara! Miss Kara!
She wiggled out of his arms, and he dropped her in mine. She wrapped her legs around my waist and her arms around my neck like a hungry boa. She smelled of soap and powder, and she fit in my arms like an egg in a carton. There was something decidedly uncomfortable about the comfort, especially with her father standing there like a right fielder in a Little League game. He gave a half nod and turned to exit the room. This was too easy. It was too easy for him to walk away. It was too easy for me to hold Nicole in my arms while she calmed down. It was all too facile, and it was the start of a downhill slope that led to him not being the parent he needed to be. But that was none of my business, now was it? Many people say that children are very intuitive. Another easy assumption is that they just know things that we don't know, and they sense what they need without ever verbalizing it. It's all too easy. But then something happens, and all of the assumptions seem incontrovertible.
"Daddy," she cried, lifting her head. "Stay here, please."
I could believe he wanted two things at once. He wanted to get out of that room and let me handle it, and he wanted to stay there just as much. The conflict wasn't in his face, because I couldn't see his expression. It was in the resigned slouch of his shoulders and the quickness with which he turned to walk back into the room. He laid his hand on her back, and she returned her head to my shoulder. She yawned and pointed to the bed.
"It's time to sleep now."
Brad and I looked at each other in the dark room. Nicole just waited, and when we did not react quickly enough, she picked her head up and pointed to the bed again and said exactly nothing.